Welcome to Knowing God in the Word, brought to you by the Word of Truth Ministry, publishers of Seed and Bread. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. This radio program is for the purpose of helping listeners fulfill the greatest need we have as believers, to know God. Please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org for a study guide outline of today's lesson, as Nathan will continue his teaching series on the book of John in chapter 11 with When Jesus Wept. And now, Bible teacher Nathan Johnson.
Thanks, Bob. In John chapter 11, we are studying the seventh and the climactic sign in the Gospel of John of the resurrection of the man Lazarus. And we saw last time that the Lord had arrived just outside of Bethany on the fourth day after his death. We saw that his sister Martha came to him, and he led her to a great statement of faith regarding who he is, back in verse 27, when she said, "Yes, Lord, I believe that you are the Christ, the Son of God, who is to come into the world." Now we continue with his meeting with her sister Mary in John chapter 11 and verse 28. It says, "And when she had said these things, she went her way and secretly called Mary her sister, saying, 'The teacher has come and is calling for you.'" So at this point, Martha leaves him and goes her way. And remember, we've already talked about that to go your way meant to go about your business. And Martha probably had business to do, as Lazarus' funeral was going on at this point. So she probably had duties for the guests and so forth. So she goes her way, but she sends word to her sister Mary at this point, and tells her that Christ has called for her. "The teacher's come and is calling for you." Verse 29, "As soon as she heard that, she arose quickly and came to him." So as soon as Mary hears this message from her sister Martha, she gets up and comes immediately. And like I said the last time, I think it's not fair to blame Mary for not coming the first time, because we have no indication that Mary even knew he was there the first time. And Martha kind of kept it quiet, not wanting to let the Jews who were in with Mary know about it, since some of them were the Lord's enemies and wanted to put him to death, maybe. So it's not fair to blame Mary for not coming the first time, when the first time we find out that she actually heard he was there, she immediately got up and went to him just like her sister. So let's not say things against Mary that we don't know are true. Verse 30, "Now Jesus had not yet come into the town, but was in the place where Martha met him." So we find out here that Martha had gone out and met the Lord at a place outside of town. And remember, Bethany was a very small town, so that doesn't have to mean he was very far away. But the Lord had stayed there, and he was waiting where Martha had met him. And he didn't come on into the city of Bethany. So she goes out to meet him. She goes to the same place. Verse 31, "Then the Jews who were with her in the house and comforting her, when they saw that Mary rose up quickly and went out, followed her, saying, 'She is going to the tomb to weep there.'" So remember, we saw last time that the Jews, and in John that means the rich ruling class, like the religious leaders and the nobility and so forth, that they had come to Lazarus' funeral. And we talked about the fact that Mary, Martha, and Lazarus seem to have been the leading citizens of the city of Bethany, and were part of this rich ruling class themselves. And so it seems like everybody who's anybody in Jerusalem has come to this funeral. Now, we also talked about that it seems strange to us that this funeral is taking place after Lazarus is already buried in his tomb. But that shouldn't seem strange if we knew their customs at the time, that they didn't have the complicated techniques for preserving the body that we have that allows us to bury after our funeral. So they would bury before the funeral and then let everybody know and have them come to the funeral after the body is already buried. So this was just standard for procedure for them, even though it seems strange to us. So all these Jews are here, and they're seeking to comfort Mary and Martha. And it seems that most of them were with Mary in the house and comforting her. But now Mary, when she gets word secretly from her sister Martha, and I think it's secretly because she didn't want to let these Jews know the Lord was there, because I think Mary and Martha were well aware of the fact that some of these Jews were the Lord's enemies and wanted to put him to death. So she gets up, doesn't say a word to anybody, and goes out to go to the Lord. But at this point, all their attempts to keep the Lord's arrival quiet go awry. Because the Jews who were there, when they see Mary just get up and go out, they start to think about it. They start to say, why did she get up and go out without saying anything? And so they decide she must be going to the tomb to weep. So since they're there to comfort her, they get up and follow her. So much for keeping the Lord's arrival quiet. Because here when Mary comes, here comes this crowd of Jews, including the Lord's enemies, following her. So now they're going to find out that he's there. Well, I think many of them probably knew that Mary, Martha, and Lazarus were friends with the Lord. But that doesn't mean that, of course, they knew that the Lord was actually going to come. But now they'll find out. Verse 32. Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. So Mary arrives where Jesus was. And in many ways, she acts just like her sister Martha acted, as we saw last time, when she came to the Lord. And that is, first she falls down before him. That, of course, shows her devotion to the Lord. But then she says basically the exact same words that Martha said, that, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And I think that's understandable. And any of us who have gone through grief in a grieving situation, you realize that there are certain thoughts that run through your head over and over again. Not constantly, of course, but they keep coming back, and you keep thinking them. And maybe if it's some way you think you could have prevented this person dying, it's, oh, if only I had done this, or if only I had done that. If only I had delayed the person a little longer, or hadn't delayed the person quite as long, they might not have gotten in the car accident and wouldn't be dead now, or something like that. So I think Mary and Martha, this was probably a thought that was running through their heads over and over again, is if only the Lord had been here, Lazarus wouldn't have died. And remember, they had waited till he was very sick to send for the Lord, because they didn't want to put the Lord in danger from his enemies. But maybe now they were blaming themselves. We should have sent for him sooner. If only we had done that, Lazarus wouldn't have been dead. So I don't think she's blaming the Lord for this. Maybe she's blaming herself. Now she says the same thing Martha said up to this point. But remember, Martha went on. And she said, I know that even now, anything you ask of God, he'll give you. And almost seemed to imply that you could raise Lazarus from the dead even now. But Mary doesn't say anything like that. She just stops after the first statement. Verse 33. Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. So the Lord looks and he sees Mary weeping. I think she was weeping for her brother. Of course, she cared about him. And he sees the other Jews with her weeping. And some of them maybe were very close friends with Lazarus, just like the Lord was, and were weeping for sorrow. But understand also that it was very good form to weep at funerals at the time. It was kind of thought that it really honored the dead to have a lot of weeping and wailing at their funeral. And so you wanted to have weeping and wailing. And they felt that maybe it was the relatives and those closest to them who were supposed to do that. But the fact is, they realized that often the relatives are maybe cried out by the time the funeral comes. Maybe they're just exhausted from weeping, or they're so busy, or whatever, they're in such shock that they can't weep. So it was therefore considered very good form to weep at the funeral, so that would kind of take pressure off the close relatives and those closest to the dead person, so they wouldn't feel like they had to weep, so they could do other things. In fact, sometimes at funerals then, they would even hire professional mourners, whose job it was to go around to funerals, and they would be really good at weeping and wailing. And they would weep and wail and carry on, and that would seem to provide the proper atmosphere of sorrow at the person's death, and then other people didn't have to worry about weeping. Well, that was kind of silly and hypocritical, and of course the person wailing and weeping then didn't really care, maybe didn't even know the dead person at all. But I don't know that that was necessarily going on here. There's no sign that Mary and Martha actually have a professional wailer at this funeral. But he sees these Jews weeping. Now, some of them probably really cared about Lazarus. Maybe some of them were just trying to show their support. But when he sees them, it says he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. But that word groaned, in the Greek, that actually means to snort like a horse. To snort like a horse. Now, when a horse snorts, well, he could just be trying to clear his nose, of course. But when he's not just trying to clear his nose, when he's snorting from emotion, generally the reason the horse snorts is because he's angry, not because he's sorrowful. So you hear a horse snorting, you better get out of the way because he's probably mad. So when the Lord snorted like a horse, that wasn't indicating sorrow so much as it was anger and indignation. And so the Lord saw this. I think he saw what death caused. He saw the sorrow. He saw the heartache and the grief and the loss that this tragedy of death caused in this man's family. And it made him angry. He snorted. He was indignant. Now I'll tell you something. You don't want to have this God angry at you. You don't want to have this God snorting like a horse in anger at you. And I would note that it wasn't long after this, it wasn't long after God snorted like a horse at the death of Lazarus, that he defeated death once and for all by his own death and then resurrection from the dead. So death didn't remain undefeated very long after the Lord snorted like a horse at it. Verse 34, and he said, "Where have you laid him?" They said to him, "Lord, come and see." Now remember, when he met Martha, he challenged her, and he had a conversation with her, and he challenged her faith, and she did have faith at his challenge. But notice he doesn't do that with Mary here. Now for one thing, Mary hadn't started off with some of the faith that Martha did, saying, "Even now God would give you whatever you ask." But also I think we have to realize that this is no longer a private conversation. Before it was just him and Martha and his disciples. But now this crowd of Jews, some of whom were his enemies, have followed along. And so he can't really have a private conversation and stir up to faith now, at least not as easily. It'll be in view of his enemies. So he doesn't do that. He just says, "I want to see where he's laid. Take me to where he's laid." And so they say, "Come and see." Verse 35. Jesus wept. Now this is a very famous verse. And a lot of people know this verse. For one, because it's the shortest verse in the Bible. So it's an easy verse to memorize. You can say, "I memorized the verse." But for another thing is that the verse is very moving. It's very meaningful. The fact that our Lord Jesus Christ, that he wept. And that's something that's dear to people. Now, the Greek indication here is not the traditional wailing that people might do at the time, where they would wail and warble at the top of their lungs. No, this just means that he shed tears. He shed tears. And it was a sign of a heartfelt sorrow. And not just an outward show of weeping and wailing. Now notice that the Lord felt no guilt at shedding tears at the death of a loved one. And there are people today who reason their way to the idea, they don't check the scripture for it, but they reason their way to the idea that maybe they shouldn't weep and they shouldn't be sad at the death of a loved one. Because they decide that maybe that loved one has gone off to heaven. And so they're having a good time now, so why should you weep for them? So they decide they're not going to have a funeral and have a sad time, they're going to have a party and going to celebrate that their loved one is dead. I think people who do that, often they are having trouble maybe with denial. And they'll have to pay for that later on. That'll come back to get them eventually. Because you can't deny your sorrow when someone dies. It's quite natural to sorrow when someone dies. And there's no example in the Bible of anybody having a party when someone dies unless they hated the person. No, it's just natural to have sorrow when a person dies. And to weep when a loved one dies is not to show lack of faith. The Lord wept at Lazarus' death. So we shouldn't think there's anything wrong with us weeping at someone's death. And notice that the Lord wept even though he knew what he was about to do. He knew he was about to raise Lazarus from the dead. And a few minutes later, Lazarus wouldn't be dead at all and this would all be over. And yet he wept anyway. So certainly we shouldn't feel bad about weeping when our loved ones die. It's not a sign of lack of faith. Verse 36. Then the Jews said, "See how he loved him." And these Jews, now they've seen the Lord. And many of them have recognized him. They realize he's this guy who some of them consider their enemy. And the religious leaders are trying to arrest and kill. And yet maybe they feel like a funeral isn't an appropriate time for a confrontation, which good for them at least. But they recognize in his tears shed here that this is heartfelt sorrow. And they were right. The Lord did love Lazarus. He said so earlier in the chapter. But I wonder, no doubt the Lord's tears were for Lazarus, but I wonder if he was also looking back, as only God could do, and seeing all the many centuries and millennia even of heartache and sorrow and loss that death causes, separation between people who love each other, and all the grief that brings. Now, I don't think we as human beings can even comprehend or understand how much sorrow and grief and heartache death has caused down through the ages. It's just too much for us. We can't grasp it. But the Lord was God, and he could and he could see all the pain and sorrow that death caused. And so I can't help but wonder if his tears, well, they were for Lazarus, if they weren't also for all the heartache and sorrow that death has caused down through the centuries. But the Lord wept because he loved. He loves people. And so it hurts him when they die, just like it hurts us. The sorrow and heartache, it hurts him. But some of them doubted it. Verse 37. And some of them said, could not this man, who opened the eyes of the blind, also have kept this man from dying? Now remember, these Jews who had come to this funeral, they were the Jerusalem Jews. And we shouldn't think that the only religious leaders there were in Israel were in Jerusalem. No, there were Pharisees, there were religious leaders, there were rich ruling class people scattered all throughout Israel, in all the major towns and even in a lot of the small towns. But it was the Jerusalem religious leaders, the Jerusalem Jews in particular, who had seen two of his signs that we've seen in John. First of all, the healing of the lame man on the Sabbath day. And second of all, the healing of the blind man on the Sabbath day back in John chapter 9. And so these Jews were very aware of that event, and they recall it. And they say, look, this was the man who healed one who had been born blind. And they probably knew that that had never happened anywhere in the Old Testament. Even the great healers of the Old Testament, well, they healed blindness. It was never blindness that had been from birth. And the Lord had done something that no one else had done. So he said, this man who could even heal a man who was blind from birth, couldn't he have somehow stopped this death? If he really cared about this man so much, couldn't he have stopped him from dying in the first place? And so they doubted his love because he had allowed this death. Now the fact was that these people didn't realize what was about to happen. They didn't realize that the Lord was about to raise Lazarus from the dead. They didn't know the whole story. They didn't have the whole picture. And if they had, they wouldn't have doubted the Lord's love. And I think the same thing's true sometimes when people doubt the Lord's love in our day, when he doesn't stop tragedies from happening, doesn't stop people from dying, is that we don't always see the full picture. We don't always see the last chapter. We don't always see how these things will turn out in the end. And I think if we could see that, we would realize that the Lord really does love. And that just because tragedies and death happens, doesn't mean that he doesn't love. But these people doubt his love because he let Lazarus die in the first place. Verse 38. Then Jesus, again groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave, and a stone lay against it. So now the Lord, he's still troubled, and he arrives at the tomb. Apparently he had been shedding his tears on the way as they were traveling there. Now it describes for us this tomb, and this was very common for the burial place of rich people back at the time, the rich ruling class. And that is that they would bury in a cave. There were many caves in that part of the country. And they would carve out stone shelves and so forth in that cave. And a cave was not a tomb for just one person. It would be a family tomb where the whole family would be buried. Now these caves were made, and what they would typically do to seal the cave, because in the cave of a wealthy person, they would often put some rich ornaments and decorations in that tomb. And so it would become a prime target for grave robbers, people who were poor who thought they could enrich themselves from these things. So what they would do is they would carve out of a rock from some nearby convenient hillside, they would carve a large boulder, a large stone. And they would carve it to the point where there was just a little bit of stone left holding it in place. And then they would carve a track, a trench that the stone would naturally roll down, leading to the mouth of the cave. And then when they finally used the cave, when they turned it into a tomb, buried somebody there for the first time, they'd carve out the little bit of stone they had left, and then that stone would naturally roll down the track and lodge itself over the mouth of the cave. And that effectively sealed the cave from the casual grave robber. Now, you wanted to use that cave, that tomb again, to bury other people in, so they would have equipment to move that stone, but still it would take the proper equipment and a large number of men, maybe about 10 men, to actually move that big, heavy stone. And so it wasn't something a casual grave robber could do, and it would help protect these tombs. So this was the kind of tomb Lazarus was buried in. Verse 39, Jesus said, take away the stone. Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time there is a stench, for he has been dead 4 days. So the Lord at this point commands them to take away the stone. And this was, of course, in preparation for the miracle, the sign he was about to work. But Martha doesn't understand this. And she thinks maybe that he just wants to see Lazarus one last time. And we understand that's natural at funerals. And that's why we often have these open casket funerals, is because people who want to see the person who's died one last time, or see their body at least, one last time before the person's buried. And that's kind of a natural human thing to want to do, to kind of bring closure. And Martha thinks that's what he wants to do. So she says to him, Lord, that's a bad idea. This is the fourth day since he died. By now, he stinks. Remember, they're in the warm climate of Israel. They didn't do all the embalming techniques and things that we do to preserve bodies. So he'll smell bad by this time. You don't really want to remove that stone. That's not a good idea. Well, she didn't know what he was about to do. Verse 40. Jesus said to her, Did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? So the Lord doesn't say anything about him stinking. He just reminds her of his earlier statements. Now, the Lord had never said, if you believe, you'll see the glory of God earlier. So what did he mean by this? Did I not say to you? What is the glory of God that he was talking about? See, this word glory in English, it's a word that we use in such a generic way that I think it's kind of lost most of its meaning. And when we use it, we don't even necessarily know what it means. For example, in a lot of churches or religious groups, especially in the southern part of this country, if someone gets really worked up or excited, they might shout in the middle of the service, Glory! And all they pretty much mean by that is just that they're feeling pretty excited. And they don't mean much else. So glory is a word that's lost most of its meaning in English. But the meaning of this word in Greek is esteem. E-S-T-E-E-M. The glory a thing has is the esteem that thing has. And to give something glory is to esteem it, to hold it in honor. And a person's glory is the thing that they most honor or hold in highest esteem about themselves. Now, what is the glory of God that Christ says she might see? Well, I think 2 Corinthians 4, verse 6 reveals that to us. When Paul writes, For it is the God who commanded light to shine out of darkness, who has shown in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. Paul tells us that the glory of God is in the face of Jesus Christ. And she was about to see that glory. And that's what the Lord had said earlier, I am the resurrection and the life. And so he says, you're about to see the glory of God. You're about to really see me, who and what I am, that I am the resurrection and the life, if you'll believe. That's what I said to you. So verse 41, Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. So at this point, they take away the stone. And I think when this is usually depicted in movies and plays and so forth, they have two guys walk up to the stone and they kind of pretend to be pushing and shoving what's obviously a styrofoam or cardboard stone away from the tomb. Well, that's not the way it was. Remember, these stones, like I said, would take about 10 men and the proper equipment to move them. So there's probably a lot of work and grunting and putting the equipment in place and then pulling and shoving and groaning and sweating. So this was a long operation to finally get the stone moved. This was no casual thing. This was no two guys rolling it away. And then remember, once you actually get a crack, the stench from the tomb is going to start coming out. So that's not going to make it any easy job to push and pull either when you're gagging on the stench. But finally, they got the stone moved. And at that point, Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. Now notice this, he does not ask for a hearing, but he thanks him for already hearing. So I wonder if maybe he had already asked privately sometime before this that the Father would let him raise Lazarus. Or maybe he means that the Father had heard the cry of his heart that was crying out for him to raise Lazarus from the dead. So what do we see here? Well, we see that Martha might have believed that the Lord could raise Lazarus and that the Lord is the resurrection, but she does not seem to have had the idea that he was about to raise him right then. Yet she did believe it. Now the question is, do we believe that the Lord is the one who can raise our dead loved ones to life? Do we really trust ourselves and those whom we love to his loving care after death? We should. And remember the point of John, that we would believe in him. So let's believe.
What a privilege it is to know the one who commands light to shine out of darkness, the one who not only gives life in the first place, but can restore life from death. May we also trust Christ for this in our lives. Thank you, Nathan, for your lesson on the Book of John. On our next program, Nathan will continue his teaching series in the Book of John with When Lazarus Was Raised. Thank you for joining us today. We trust that you have been edified and encouraged by this program. For more information on the program, to hear past programs, and for other downloadable material that Nathan has produced, please visit our website at knowinggodintheword.org. We offer a free weekly email newsletter in which Nathan does the same thing he does on this radio program, going verse by verse through the Bible and then discussing what it means. Email Nathan at nathan@knowinggodintheword.org and ask to be placed on his mailing list. For more Bible study literature by Nathan and other Bible teachers, including Seed and Bread Bible studies, please visit the Word of Truth Ministry at seedandbread.org or write to the Word of Truth Ministry, P.O. Box 1609, Canyon Country, California, 91386. Although your donations are always appreciated, you will not be solicited for funds in any way when you write, so feel free to contact us. I'm your host, Bob Juno, with Bible teacher Nathan Johnson. We'll say goodbye for now, but we look forward to you joining us next week on Knowing God in the Word.